Okay. Feedback for the last breakout, which we from this maybe to start with Françoise.
So we were asked to look more particularly at disclosures related to employee benefits and more specifically expected contributions in the plan, expected future benefit payments, and also the reconciliation shown on slide 17. So if I start with the disclosure of expected contributions into the plan on slide 12, that disclosure will be user objective is confirmed. The disclosure provided overall meets the needs and can be prepared by parents. However, a number of comments were made on how to make this disclosure more effective. Preparers have highlighted that having this projection over a number of years has shown on disclosure might not be that relevant because basically the projections on how to meet deficits are revisited from pension valuations to next pension valuations. So it could be better to indicate the frequency of these pension valuations and when the next would take place. Indicate the payments, the future payments that will be made out of the decisions that have been made, and only give an indication that on the basis of the last pension valuation, if it was confirmed, give an average of what the yearly contribution would be beyond those cash payments which are will take place. Finally, provide a sense of whether the pension valuation is made on a going concern basis or on a solvency basis, because that has an impact on the amounts that are ultimately paid by the entity. Moving to slide 13, we had a lot of discussion on it. I think what stands out of the discussion is that indeed the user objective is confirmed, that having information about the duration of the liability is important information. However, that beyond that, this disclosure itself would not be what users would need. They rather would need insights into the quality of the underlying assets to and of the asset return, so that that gives them insights into how the deficit might evolve. But we had a lot of discussions, and the views were not necessarily totally unified. So that's the way I can provide the results in. Then we move to the reconciliation on slide 17. And this reconciliation was found useful by users, largely because it helped, said it was great to be able to reconcile back to the financial statements, to the income statement. And I found, and preparers say that they can provide this reconciliation that can be done. But users found it so great that they want even more and would like to be able to reconcile that back to the cash flow statement. And at that point, preparers say, stop, don't do it. There is no way we can extract the pension information out of the working capital calculation of the whole company. So sorry, you will have to be happy with the number that is shown as employee contribution. And that's it.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Françoise. Can you move to food one, Tom?
Sorry. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, yep.
Okay, so we started with we were assigned question 2 and 3 on fair values. And we ended up looking at question 1 and 4 as well, but I'll go through it with the start of the Q2. So people were fine with what was on slides 22 and 23 with respect to the classification. But the main message was that what really counted wasn't so much that something met the criteria to get into level 2, but in fact, what was the quality of measurement in level 2? And one of the comments was that the classifications are, to some degree, there's a logic behind them, but they're not foolproof, so it's a little bit fuzzy, and they're actually a continuum. And some level 2s are much more solid measurements than other level 2s. So that would lead us to being interested in question 1, which I'll come back to when we get there. So then we went on to question 3. This one, people really liked the slide 25. Thought it was a good way to go. In general, both preparers and users seemed to think that this was a better way to go than an assumption by assumption. That it gave a reasonable range that people could work with. They did think it useful to know what were the primary assumptions that went into building this range, but they didn't need the 1% up, 1% down. They thought that this was better. And in fact, they liked it so much better that ultimately we get to question 1. They thought that would be useful for question 1 as well. Which is kind of where I'll go now, is when they looked at slide 20, they weren't keen on this 5% band up and down. It's arbitrary. And really, the underlying distribution behind any fair value is going to range widely. 5% might be a useful thing sometimes, but other times it won't be. And so it ought to be really driven by the underlying variability, people thought. And that's where, again, bringing the idea from slide 25 in with the reasonable set of assumptions for that particular valuation would be a better way to go. And so the same things that I said earlier, I think they'd like to see transferred. They also found the underlying reconciliation for level 2s was really important. And then for questions, so question 1, yeah, bringing in some of that finer information would be good. Question 4, thought it was the example in the slide was about the right level of disclosure. Again, people thought it might be carried to level 2. With respect to the costs of doing it, our preparers didn't have enough experience with that kind of thing to have a good idea how to assess costs. There was a recommendation that we sort of seek out entities that might have that kind of structure to make sure that we understood the cost of doing it. And then there was a general thing just from the beginning is that this mattered a lot more to financial institutions. And I think people understood that the standard has to be for everybody, but in many cases for industrial, it wouldn't be material. And for financial, there was an additional comment that in many cases, financial institutions have to provide to the regulator information about these variances and so on, and that it would be reasonable if the information is available and it's material and informative that some of the stuff that goes to the regulator come back in disclosures for the general user.
Okay, thanks, Tom. And it's obvious that you didn't have a preparer from the banking community in your group.
No.
There was not much assistance.
Our preparers just noted that it might be good to talk to one.
Okay.
Nick?
Thank you. So we started on slide 14 with question 2 around the sensitivity analysis of significant actuarial assumptions. And whilst it's recognised that sensitivity analysis was important, I'd say there were mixed views from the users on whether we need the information on the interrelationships. There was also some debate over the specific variables that were highlighted in the example, and particularly given that both the discount rate and the rate of increase in pensions both in some respects are related to inflation. And also the variables that are chosen will have an impact on costs as well, the cost of providing this information. It's felt in all circumstances companies will need to go and employ actuarial expertise to come up with this kind of disclosure. But the cost will in essence be driven by how straightforward the assumptions that are used here. So if it's discount rates, that's very straightforward. If it's mortality information, that's probably okay. It's described as when you get to things like the rate of increase in pensions, that gets particularly complicated. Another variable that also will impact the degree of expense or cost is how many schemes you have, how many different countries you operate in, for instance. So those things were flagged there. We then went on to slides 15 and 16, which was when there are a number of different plan valuations beyond the IAS 19 valuation. And there was some rephrasing of the question that went on in our group. So the question starts with, if these things exist, what do you want? But actually, I think from our users in the group, prefer to say that, if these things are reported in the financial statements, what further information do you want? But actually our users said, if these things exist, the actuarial valuation and the buyout valuation, we would like them to be reported in the financial statements. That was the first kind of stopping point. We talked about some specifics in the UK. So clearly in the UK, you have a set of trustees. It's the trustees that commission the actuarial valuation. There can be sensitivities between the trustees and the employee. This isn't necessarily the employee's information. In terms of providing that additional guidance in terms of why there are differences, I think some of the differences just come around because the methodology is different between these. And is there's a question, is that really an investor education? And are the financial statements the right place for investor education? In terms of some of the specifics, and so on page 16, there's an example where there's a timing difference between the valuations. That may be better to flag those things, or the difference in discount rates, but just because these are calculated on a different basis may not be the right place for putting that in. But I think the overall message from the users was actually, rather than thinking about providing further detail here about differences, but wanting the actuarial and buyout valuations where they exist. And then we did have some time left over, so we went to question on slide 12, 1A, which was about the cash contributions into the scheme and the ability, and also to differentiate those contributions between regular payments and payments to reduce the deficit. And that user need was confirmed, but it's also felt that this information would be helpful for unfunded schemes as well. But equally, the need for users to have that information was recognised by preparers as well. I think everyone agreed that this was important information. And accepting that in some jurisdictions these may be estimates, but generally the cost of providing this information was not considered to be too onerous either. It was felt that perhaps there needs to be some narrative around it. So let's say in certain jurisdictions there's a 3-year review that needs to be perhaps added as colour to say that this is subject to the next actuarial review, which is due in 2022, something along those lines. But general agreement in the room that this was valuable information and that it could be provided not at a significant cost, well, at a reasonable cost.
Okay, Gavin.
Thank you. Our group discussed fair value measure in questions 1 and 4. Question one really is on slides 19 through 21. In essence, the question was asking, should you or would it be nice to have level three disclosures for level two assets? You know, with sort of the underlying theme of the question. The I would say the, I think you've started with slide 21, additional disclosures for level two. This is a real disclosure from an IFRS reporting company, but basically all for the users in the room believe level, you know, disclosures about how you actually value the portfolios and the assets, similar to level three for level two assets, would be very valuable and very useful to have. So again, what you're looking at slide 20 is essentially is classically the level three disclosures. This particular company is level two, widespread support amongst the users. This is a great thing to have. We had a couple of discussions on transfers. I'll come back to it a couple of times, but the general sense is transfers between categories is critical to know what they are. And also acknowledging there's a bit of an asymmetrical thing about leaving level three is a different phenomenon than going into level three and so on, but nonetheless, that and not so much concern going between levels one and two. Perhaps the, but nonetheless, understanding the transfers, now the preparers in the room push back, is to some extent this is case by case. You don't want 100 pages of disclosures articulating each individual transfer. When you go there, you better find a way to make it quick and to the point in there. But often it is a case by case, security by security determination why it's transferred, and all the reasons may be different. So. Just be aware, and in the users room agree, there's an awful lot of information in that IFRS 13 provides. We're not just looking for massive volumes increases in that information, but understanding transfers, if anything, is critical. We looked at slide 20, which was sort of the sensitivity analysis in there, but we got to the sensitivity analysis for what purpose? And I mean, there's, it'd be nice to have, you know, assuming all these investments were bonds, it's easier to articulate the issue there than equities or alternative investments. But it'd be really nice to have what is the yield in them, what's the duration, and so on and so on. But then we sort of just diverged into what's the purpose of this to help predict, you know, in next year or next 2 years income statements, or is it to provide information in the event that there's an exponential crash and crisis, and therefore it's more recovery as opposed to yield. I don't know if it was a strong majority opinion, but I think the general sense was thinking that as you just prepare these disclosures, and might have been named perhaps more preparers than standard setters, just think in terms of, you know, majorly downside risk in terms of crash crises and so on, as opposed to just predicting next year's yield that's going to be recognized. So think of that as the objective, if you will. If we move to our second question that we were asked to deal with was reconciliation of the level three disclosure. So if you look at slide 26, this is a fully compliant and then some example of, you know, of a, you know, what one person views as a sort of a best in class, you know, benchmark type level of disclosure. You have the question, what is critical in here? General sense is transfers in and out is individually the most critical item in here, the and it's also helpful understanding how much is just plain exchange rate movements. That's always, you know, supposed to be buried in other, buried in some other line item. That's critical. I think from the preparer's perspective is all of this can be done. The challenges are not so much transfers, but purchases and issuances. It just transfers are basically CUSIP number, instrument specific. And by the way, foreign exchange movements, yes, very useful to have, also very difficult to do. in there, but none of it is, all of it can be done. It's really just a question, does it pass the cost benefit test, both plus understanding close and reporting cycles get shorter, but not longer. And more you ask for, it puts even more strain on the ability to deliver these things and close. And I think, I mean, that's the, you know, some and substance we discussed. I don't know if they be people who have builds on it, but that's it.
Okay, thanks, Gary. Sandra?
I two observations. One was on the, it's really a question. On page 25, where you have the sensitivity analysis on your level three fair value measures, is that just for those that are on a recurring remeasurement basis, or would you be looking for this type of disclosure on non-recurring level three measurement? I look at this in our industry. If we wanted to change, when we do an acquisition, we want to change the price forecast. Well, that changes your production profile, that changes your cost estimates, because it's very driven off from your expectations on that. So all of your underlying data would need to be changed, and it would just be extremely costly and really bog you down. But if it's something that is on a recurring basis, you may have an ability to do it with simultaneous changes. And then I just wanted to make one point going to the benefit plan disclosures. If you had other plan valuations, but perhaps you have 20 plans and you only have that on one, is it really useful information? So I think there has to be a judgment call on when you disclose it, because you're not going to want to provide granular detail about one particular plan.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I think the same is true for all this level two and level three. I mean, if you have a lot of instruments, which is different classes, different derivatives, and I don't know, the one table makes a lot of sense, right? But
well, on transfer, you know, and should probably be discussed on transfers between levels one, two, and three, but also a similar sensitivity about transfers between held maturity, held for sale, held for trading is an equal importance to understand. It deals with your intent, your duration and intent to keep assumptions.
Don't have that any longer.
Just to flag that the level three disclosures have the potential to read across into the disclosure sensitive information. So here you're potentially giving information about cash flows of a third party, and as soon as you start providing more and more sensitivity information, it is possible to start to get more insight into those, and there may be constraints, not only commercial constraints but also regulatory and government control type constraints around the disclosure of that kind of information.
Oh, yes.
I just wanted to sort of like make a very high level comment on the pension disclosures, which is that obviously everything is very sensitive to assumptions, but my nervousness, and I think that's probably true for a lot of users, is really around the plan assets and their returns. And I think there is just a very serious risk that we could have a market collapse or a situation where reasonable returns can only be achieved from very high risk investments that can actually go under. So just very big picture as a guiding thought as we, you know, prepare all of this, it's very important for me as a user to at any point in time be able to make a call what would actually happen if the plan assets really were to dwindle.
Good. Any further comments?
No. And you guys, you're happy with that?
Yes, just to say thank you very much. We've got some really, really useful information today.
Okay, I think that is true for the whole 2 days, because man, I think we have done a lot of work, many breakout sessions. Very good input from you. Thank you for all of that. Thank you for having attended that meeting. And I wish you all a safe trip back home and a wonderful weekend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.